Thanks so much, Alison. Do keep Bibles open, and there's a little outline here on our sheets to guide us through where we're going to be going today in today's passage. I imagine many of us at some point in our lives, we've thought about what is the good life? And what does a good life, a life well lived, look like? What does it mean to live the good life? I guess certain types of people might come to mind, perhaps someone who progresses in their office, gets to the top, someone at the same time who's managing their family at home, and at the same time as all of that, I'm going big in the gym. I'm getting the big numbers. And I guess as we walk around Canary Wharf, I guess it's a bit like we might feel like we can see this good life right in front of our eyes, happening right here. And colleagues doing well, and the sun comes out, and people are grabbing drinks on the terrace together. The good life. Surely that is the good life. Well, I guess by all of societies, our societies and measures and ideals, this is it. We are in it right now. We are living the good life in Canary Wharf. And I guess, well, possibly, out of all of the ways that we might describe the good life, all the adjectives we might use, all the words we might use to describe it, I guess we would be slow to include the word Christian. Christian. Well, Christians, well, often they're the punchline of jokes, the target of social media outrage, the outlet of a government crackdown. I guess for most of the last 2,000 years, under the Roman Empire originally and now today, I'm suggesting that Christians, they're the ones living the good life. That'd be a crazy thing to say, wouldn't it? Just look at them. Well, except we have what Hebrew says to us today. What God tells us is that there is much more going on than what meets the eyes. He says there is much more going on. We might remember what's happening here. Today's passage, we are in a hall of fame, of amazing believers from the past, from before Jesus. Big names of believers through the centuries. And because of what unites them, their faith, I guess we could call it the cheesy name, the Hall of Faith. And as we walk through this hall of faith, down the corridors, looking at the lives lining the walls, their trust in God, we look on and we realise, oh yeah, actually, that's the good life. They're living the good life. It's strange, isn't it? Because on the surface, their lives look mixed. But despite appearances, God says they're the ones living the good life. And this is God's verdict, what he says. Let's flip back to what we saw last week, at the beginning of chapter 11. Chapter 11, verses 1 and 2. It says this. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it, the people of old received their commendation. So what does God say? Well, God says that people who trust him, people of faith, these people are commended. The rubber stamp from God. These people are living the good life, God says. The seal of approval. And as we look on in this hall of faith, we want to live like that. We think, yes, give me that good life. I guess it might not look like it, and as we go through, we're going to see it definitely doesn't seem like it on the surface. But this is the good life, the life well lived. So, for us today, and I guess for Christian brothers and sisters, I'm living 2,000 years ago, we would do well to connect with our history, to be inspired by this hall of faith, to take notes from some ancient wisdom. Well, so what is the good life? Well, on our handouts, firstly today, it's trusting that God has something better. These people, what united them was that they trusted that God had something better for them than this life, better than anything they could see and taste and touch. Let's jump in with Moses, verse 23, there, top left corner. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that the child was beautiful and they were not afraid of the king's edict. Actually, we don't start with Moses, do we? We start with Moses' parents. We might know a little bit about Moses' story, I guess from the book of Exodus, or perhaps there's a film, The Prince of Egypt. A few liberties are taken to make it into a DreamWorks film. But yeah, it's a cracker from our childhoods, perhaps. Moses, born as an Israelite. The Israelites, God's people, they were slaves under Pharaoh. Pharaoh, who's an Egyptian dictator, a tyrant. Think Israelites in something like a concentration camp, forced labor under the hot sun. I guess by most measures, this life does not look like the good life at all. On top of that, this verse mentions the king's edict. What it's referring to, this is also in the film and definitely in the book, which is better. The king decided that he would try and squash any rebellion that might come his way. So what's he going to do? Well, he's going to kill all of the boys that are born. Stop any man perhaps rising up to take his place. Kill them all. So we might think that Moses is going to die before he even grows up, except for his parents. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents. Moses' parents, they're not afraid. They trust that God has something better for them than even perhaps being crushed by the tyrant Pharaoh. This is faith. We see this more clearly as Moses grows up. So now we get into Moses' life. Here we go. Verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. So we fast forward in Moses' story. He's been raised in the Pharaoh's house. An extraordinary story. This brutal dictator who tried to kill him becomes a sort of adopted father. And now Moses, an adult, he's the prince of Egypt. I'm surrounded by gold, I guess, pyramids, I guess women he could have taken as his wives, slaves he could have oppressed. By ancient standards, this guy could have had it all. The good life. And yet, Moses trusts that God has something better for him. Better than a seven-figure salary. Better than driving a Porsche down to the south of France to get on a yacht. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt. A life of faith, God says, that is the good life. Even if it's worth facing reproach, people having a go at us for following Jesus, like they were having a go at Moses. Moses, what are you doing? Are you mad? This faith nonsense, giving up your pyramids and your gold? Ridiculous. A life of faith. That's what Moses lived. He knew it was worth more. God had something better promised for him. A better reward. So even when he's face to face with a dictator, Moses is not afraid. It says this, verse 27, by faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible, even through terror. And Moses could have died. Moses lost it all in worldly standards. He's trusting. No, God has something better than Egypt. God has something better than what this world has to offer. Take the world. Give me Jesus. By faith, he sees what they don't see. I guess we could think of, who would it be the equivalent of today? I don't know. Prince William, perhaps. He's counting down the days. Maybe when he's going to get the keys to Windsor Castle, Balmoral, and Buckingham Palace. And think of the CEO just in waiting the CEO in waiting. He's just waiting for the promotion, or she, to KPMG, Goldman Sachs. And Moses is there, waiting in the wings. He could have had it all. All you need to do is ditch God, side with the people, the dictator who murdered his baby cousins, and you can have it all. But instead, he sides with Jesus. Moses, you had it all. Are you mad? What are you doing with your life? Well, he trusts, doesn't he? He trusts that God has something better for him. Better than all of that. So for us, I guess, 2026, there's a lot for us here to think about. I guess there's one key idea that I'd love to draw out, and that's the idea that came at the beginning and the end of Moses' life. That's the idea of not being afraid. Not being afraid. By faith, and Moses, verse 23 again, when he was born, was hidden by 3 months. His parents, they were not afraid of the king's edict. Verse 27, at the end of his life, by faith, Moses left Egypt, not being afraid. We trust that God has something better for us. And so today in our offices, or back at home, perhaps with our families, we don't need to be afraid, even of terror of the worst kind. And perhaps that strikes a nerve with us this afternoon. I imagine there are times when living for Jesus might result in quite intense anger towards us. And real terror, perhaps, we can think of in our lives from a tyrant who wields immense power over us, it might seem. Perhaps social exclusion, sticking out, friends, family, the HR department, our boss. We don't need to be scared. Even if we lose it all, like Moses did, God has something better. He has something better for us. And trusting that is the good life. That helps us think about what faith is, doesn't it? So think about it like this. So last week we were thinking that faith isn't something nebulous or a vague sort of positive hope about the future, nor is it sort of closing our eyes and just sort of doing something because we don't know why. And faith is trusting something concrete, rock solid. It's trusting something that God has said, taking it as true. Faith is not blagging a meeting, prepping it on ChatGPT 5 minutes before we go in. Faith is not a blind leap into the dark. Faith is living a life, responding to what God says. Oh, okay, so hang on. God promised a better life than this one in the life to come. Okay, I trust that. That is faith. I'm living our lives trusting that God's promises are better. He has something better for us, even better than palaces. I'm dripping with gold. As we trust that, our whole life is shaped around it, and that is faith. It's living like Moses. He wasn't afraid of the tyrant. He trusted that God had something better for him. Take the world. Give me Jesus. So we've had terror, and that's one example of what this faith looks like. This is sort of Moses in the hall of faith, and now we move on. And things are going to speed up quite quickly, sort of going to hit the fast forward button. I guess it's a bit like running down the corridors of the hall of faith. The lives whoosh past us along the side. And as we do so, there's going to be incredible sort of extremes, triumph and tragedy in these lives. Listen out for both. Faith unites them, but there is triumph and there is tragedy as we look on the surface. Let me go from verse 32. And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection. Incredible triumph in these lives. And there is tragedy. Pick up from there. Women received back the dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release, so that they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were killed with a sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth, and tragedy. There is triumph and tragedy in the hall of faith. Lives flash by, and one thing unites them. Rock-solid faith. God has promised something better than this life. That's what I'm living my life for. Something better is waiting them, even though they might die. And that is where all of this, this hall of faith lands in verse 39. And all these, 39, though commended through their faith, that's the stamp of approval, they did not receive what was promised. Think about Christians across the world today. We have the victorious, the triumphant, the Christian army captain. We have the believing tech CEO launching the new product. We have the faithful physicist winning the Nobel Prize. Triumph. And there is tragedy. And the Nigerian Christian who is shot. And the Indian Christian who is burned alive. My friend who turned to Christ is in a non-Christian family, and his dad didn't talk to him for 3 months. Tragedy. One thing unites us all, though. Living lives of faith. God has promised something better than this. Whatever society is calling the good life, well, that isn't the end of the story. There's more to see. God has promised something even better to us, hasn't he? New, eternal, everlasting life. So just as Jesus died and rose and he walked out of the grave, we will rise too, walking out of the grave into a better life. There is something better. It is sure. And as we live lives of faith like these people, we know we'll be there. Through terror and triumph and tragedy, there is more. God has promised it. So I hope basically there's lots going on here, but I suppose this is the main idea of what I think Hebrews 11 is trying to capture for us, that through whatever we're going through, whatever we might think that a life well lived looks like, what the good life is in Canary Wharf, this is quite the opposite, isn't it, Hebrews 11, of what so many people might have in mind. This is reshaping what the good life is. But yes, we might feel fear. We might feel like we want to flinch and draw back from the pain inflicted on us for following Jesus. But actually living a life like this, trusting that there is more, that is a good life. God commends it. So here we are, and we've made it. We've got to the end of the Hall of Faith. We've spanned the centuries, drawn deep from the wells of history. We've got to the end. We've sort of exited the corridors. Now what? What are we doing now? Well, Hebrews tells us, as we start chapter 12, this is what we do now. We run the race. What is the good life? Well, it's running. It's running the race. Let me read chapter 12 and verse 1. So what? Well, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. See, the author of the Hebrews is saying to us, run. Live the good life that's been given to us. Let's run. Let's run the race. Suddenly it feels a bit like, at least to me, that we've been dropped back in our secondary school athletics track. Perhaps if we're British, more likely a squelchy school field in the winter and it's raining. And people are shouting at us, run, run, go. For me, it was my Irish PE teacher. Run, pick up. I can't do it, I'm sorry. Lift up your feet. Keep your arms moving. It's like we're coming around the final bend on sports day. The school. Runners by our side, heart feels like it's going to explode. We're covered in sweat. We're wondering what on earth we're doing with our lives. The crowds and the Irish PE teacher are shouting, run, run, go, get to the finish line. Living the Christian life is a bit like a race. A race that we run with endurance all the way to the end. So don't give up. Run. This might seem a bit random. Why is he using this image? Well, it isn't as random as you might think. And the Christian life in Hebrews has already been shown to us to be a bit like a journey. It's a bit like the people who are walking through the wilderness to get to the promised land. For Christians, it's a bit like we're traveling through this world to get into the new creation. And so we are running. We are running this race with a cloud of witnesses, a crowd of people on the finish line who have finished the race before us. It's not crowds of school children and a maybe slightly angry PE teacher. It's Abel and Enoch and Abraham and Sarah and Joseph and Moses and Samuel and David saying, run. Run the race. Get to the end. It's like a marathon. My church, we had a church weekend away on Sunday. We got out of London because our church meets in Canada Water and in Greenwich, which are like marathon hotspots. When the marathon is on, you cannot go anywhere. It's absolutely locked down because the runners are going through. What are they doing? Well, we've seen it. We've all seen it, haven't we? Their spare weight is gone. They're in shorts and they're in T-shirt. They are going on to the end. They've got bottles of water. They take a sip, and then the bottle is chucked aside into the sort of the general direction of the nearest bin. They'll probably miss it and go in the gutter. Who knows? But this is the image. This is the image of the Christian life. This is running. Running light. It's like we've said no to sin. We've chucked it away from us. We are running. Running to get to the end. Running hard. The good life is running. Running the race. This, I guess, for us might seem too much for us, perhaps. Perhaps we don't feel cut out for this. Perhaps spiritually we feel like we couldn't run a 5K park run, or perhaps the 100-meter sprint to catch the bus, let alone a marathon. What's that all about? How could we possibly get to the end? Well, to help us, we do what the book of Hebrews has been telling us to do for the last 11 chapters. We look at Jesus. He helps us run the race. And verse 2, this is what we do as we run. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Yes, there is Abel and Enoch and Abraham and Sarah and whoever else, a Christian brothers and sisters, lining the finish line. There's also one man in particular who's there. And that's Jesus. We look to him and we keep running. That's how we'll get there. And think about it. Think about it this way. There's at least two things that Jesus does for us. And firstly, it says that Jesus, he perfects, or he completes our faith. That's how we're going to get to the end. It says, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. All of the hall of faith that we've just walked through, that we've seen, they were before Jesus. They didn't know him. They would have loved to have had Jesus on the finish line. But we have him there in front of us. We know that we are full forgiveness of sins, trusting in him. We know that we can come to God in prayer and ask for help whenever we want to. We know we can worship God with a true and believing heart. We have perfected faith. Because of Jesus, we are the humans that we were meant to be. Perfected faith. We can live the good life. We look at Jesus. Jesus, he perfects our faith, and he's also an example for us. Jesus has already lived the good life. It says this again in verse 2. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despising its shame, and is now seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Remember all that Jesus went through. Terror, triumph, tragedy. Jesus went through terror, being heckled and peer pressured by the crowd. Stop trusting in God. He won't save you. Are you mad? Tragedy, dying on a cross, enduring the shame, a naked man nailed to a plank of wood. Tragedy. But he trusted that there was joy to come on the other side. And so there was triumph, walking out of the grave on the third day. Jesus doesn't call us to do something that he hasn't already done himself. He has ran the race. He has got to the end. He is standing on the finish line. So the voice isn't jeering crowds or even an angry Irish PE teacher calling us home. It's Jesus calling us home. He has ran the race, the faith-filled life, the good life, par excellence. That means we can get there too. His sweet voice calling us home. Run. Run the race. So perhaps we're here, and to be honest, we don't feel like we are up to standard. Well, what could we do? Well, we could look inside. We could look at ourselves and think, oh, I'm not sure I've got it in me. I look at these faith giants in the hall of faith, and they seem like they've got way more faith than I could ever have. How could I possibly get to the end? Well, someone once said that for every one look you look at yourself in the mirror, take 10 looks at Jesus. Look to him. Having faith isn't about conjuring something up inside of us. It's about looking at Jesus, what he has done. Oh yeah, he suffered and died, and now he's in new life. God had something promised for him that was better. Of course it's true for us too. Every one look in the mirror, take 10 looks at Jesus. Look at him. Look at him. Remember Jesus and where he is. And that is faith. This is who we are. We are people of faith. And there's a little table on the second side of here. There's not a huge amount of time to do this, but it's basically saying this is who we are. Chapter 10 finished like this. And we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who have faith and preserve their souls. And that is who we are, who Hebrews has made us. We have seen what the faith is, and now we run it. We run the race, living the good life. We are finishers. So I guess as we head back to our desks, and we walk through Canary Wharf, and we see people who, on the surface, look like they're living the good life, we can remember, can't we, what God calls the good life. The good life really can look like what Canary Wharf has to offer. Getting a deposit down on the penthouse by the river, having a drink in the sun out here. But we go with these words echoing in our mind. Better than the approval of the CEO, and better than the respect of our schoolmates, God has eternal promises for us. Take the world. Give me Jesus instead. Every day of the week. Let's take a long look at Jesus then. And let's run. Let me pray to close. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Father, we know we can be weak and imperfect, just as many as the people were in this hall of faith. We thank you for Jesus. We ask that you'd help us to look at him and run the race that is set before us, knowing that this is the good life. Amen.